Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 259. Thank you for joining us. And this is also our first episode of 2024. Recording this on New Year's Day, actually, in the evening, about 8 o'clock right now. We did 90 episodes last year. Goal was at least 100 this year. Let's start it off in style. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how you feeling, man? You got Chris Sale now. A little Vaughn Grissom for a Chris Sale trade between our two favorite teams. How you feeling?
Yeah, I think that's a good talking point to start the show. Obviously, still pretty fresh on the mind. It's the most recent trade or signing, I think, still. It was wild how it all went down. I was chilling in a coffee shop on Saturday. My wife and child were still at her parents' house. I was hanging out doing some writing, and I got a text, and it was from a Red Sox guy, Ian Kundle, and he says, "What do you have on Vaughn Grissom?" He said the Red Sox are trading for him, and this was like 5 minutes before Jeff Passan dropped it. I was like, holy crap. Like, it's like I had to stop what I was doing, like writing about the A's prospects, I think, which exciting. And I was
very,
like,
very exciting, of course.
Yeah. So I was like, I need to get my thoughts together on it. So I was like, who are they sending? And literally, like, as I hit send on that text to him, like, who are the Red Sox sending back? Passan drops the tweet. And so I was like, wow, that was a crazy deal. But yeah, I think it makes sense for both teams. Like, I thought it was a rare win trade, where the Red Sox got out from under a lot of money. They also got rid of a non-reliable starter in Chris Sale, but they also got a controllable infield asset who has 6 years of control, who's 22 years old. He's shown a lot of promise at the plate, and the needs for both fit, because on the Braves front, Grissom didn't have a spot. He was not going to play on this team unless an injury happened. And the Braves need a starter. While Sale's risky, they don't need Sale to be their ace, which is nice. Right. Sale can be a number three. Sale can throw 140 innings. They can like baby Chris Sale, try to keep him healthy for the playoffs at least, and you know, work out. So there's ways around for it to work for both, I think. And I've looked at it also from the standpoint of he has a $20 million option in 2025. And so Charlie Morton comes off the books at $20 million. They probably just pick up Sale pending he's healthy, just replaces that salary. A $20 million salary is not much for a pitcher in today's landscape. Look at what Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo are getting. They're getting $15, $16 million. So $20 million for Sale is not bad if he gives you innings. Right. So yeah, it was fun. It was a wild trade. And we knew that Grissom was going to get traded at some point, but Alex Anthopoulos just works in the shadows. And I don't think anybody pegged him going to Boston for Chris Sale. Everybody assumed it was for Dylan Cease, kind of out of the blue. So that's how AA works.
Yeah, it was very weird. Like I was blindsided by this. I was sitting in my driveway talking to my daughter on the phone. I had it coming through my car speaker or whatever. And so I was looking at Twitter as I'm talking to my daughter on the phone, and I just see it all just passing, dropping it. And first person I texted was you. And yeah. Then I was like, what the heck is going on? And in my mind, I was thinking of that, the John Krasinski gif from the office. Like, what is going on? Like, that was exactly what was going through my head. I like it. I like it as long as it feels like something for at least on the Red Sox end. That's a precursor to something else. If we do this, that fills our second base hole for sure. And then if we can go out, whether it's trade, free agency, whatever, and get another pitcher or two, then I'll feel a lot better about it. But I like Grissom a good amount. I like him a lot in Fenway. He's always had a little bit more pull side pop. I think he's going to fit well in Fenway. And I still think he's a great buy low in Dynasty. So, yeah, interesting trade. It did blindside me. I didn't think we were going to, you know, trade Sale and get a Grissom back. But, hey, let's see what else Boston does after this. But, yeah, a fun little way to end the calendar year, and hopefully there's more to come, at least for my Red Sox here in 2024. But today's episode is going to be something completely unrelated to what Weider is talking about. We're doing our third base prospect rankings, back at it after a week off. Hope everyone had a great holiday season and a great and happy and safe new year. Can't believe it's already 2024, but here we are. We've already gone through catcher, first base, and second base. If you missed those episodes, go back and check those out. Those were a lot of fun. Third base this week, we got a guest later in the week for our Dynasty Third Base episode. And we will have a third episode this week, either on Wednesday or Thursday. Not quite sure which day that'll drop yet. But doing some Dynasty debates on that episode. We've been posting those from our Toolshed Twitter account. And I figured we discuss a lot of that, some of our favorite debates there. So that'll be out midweek as well. So three episode week this week. So buckle up. Let's get going. Let's get right into it now, Chris. Again, third base prospects, a position that we were talking before we started recording, both for in the prospect world and in the major leagues, very deep position. Like, I just wrote up my third base dynasty rankings on my Patreon earlier today, and it was very deep. Like, you look at, for instance, my third base 20 is Alec Bohm at the third base level, at the major level, excuse me, for dynasty. So this position, after being down for a little bit, is definitely very much on the rise again. Yeah, we might lose some guys. Maybe Elway's not third baseman long term. Maybe Gunner's not, but still, there's a lot of good talent, a lot of good young talent at this position. And that kind of it shows here in our rankings, Chris. Like, before we get into the rankings, what are your just general thoughts about the future of the third base position in general?
I was a little surprised when I filled out the sheet, and like, I haven't fully overhauled my overall or positional rankings yet for prospects. Still wrapping up the team by team write ups. Have two teams left, and then I got on a tangent with international players and FIPD the last 2 days. So that's where our focus is. But when I went and filtered by third base and I put them on our spreadsheet for the show, I was like, "Wow, this is pretty deep." Looking at the players that I have, we have 25, where at least we're going to talk about, but I think all 25 of these are actually like inside my top 250 and maybe a little bit higher, actually, which is crazy to think about just the depth of the position. and where it's going. Obviously, at the major league side, it's gotten better as well. And several of these guys are going to fill those voids soon. Junior Caminero, already in the majors. Coby Mayo probably hits the majors this year. Colt Keith will see up very soon, I'd assume, maybe opening day. Nelvin Marte already hit the majors. So a lot of these guys are on the way too, and it's just going to make the position even more deep, and it should be really fun to see how it shakes out. I was thoroughly surprised when I looked at it, to be honest. I didn't expect it to be as deep as it is.
Yeah, same here, man. Like, and some of these guys might move, you know, across the diamond or to a corner outfield spot, sure, but still, like, even if we lose a couple guys at the major league level, a couple guys in the prospect ranks, this is still looking like a very deep position for years to come. And we'll get into more into the major league side, obviously, later in the week. But yeah, this is a very fun position. I think, like, my number 25 guy was just outside my top 250, so I'm right there with you. And a lot of intriguing talent here. And a lot of guys are going to, you know, break out even further this year. We'll talk about that too. But yeah, let's start with our personal top 10 rankings here. Chris, who you got?
The start, who other than Junior Caminero? Then it follows with Coby Mayo, Colt Keith, Noelvi Marte, Curtis Meade rounding out the five spot. 6 through 10 is Brock Wilkin or Elvis Martinez, Brian Ramos, Michael Bush, and Tyler Black to finish it out.
All right, mine, same top two, Junior Caminero, Coby Mayo. I got Noelvi Marte in the three, Colt Keith in the four, Brock Wilkin five, Tyler Black six, Graham Pauly seven, Curtis Meade eight, Michael Bush nine, and Justin Henry Molloy in the 10 spot there. So fairly similar, only a couple of different ones in the back end of the top 10, but fairly similar. We get the same top four, just flipping three and four. Same top, okay, then after that kind of gets a little different. But starting with Junior Caminero, though, obviously, like you said, like, who else but Junior Caminero? I love Coby Mayo. I love Marte. I love Colt Keith. That's like tier two for me, and then there's a bit of a drop-off after that down to the Wilkins and Blacks for me, who I consider tier three at this position. But tier one by himself is Junior Caminero. Obviously, look at what he did last year. And it's literally what he's been doing his entire career. Looking back when he was in the Cleveland Guardians org back in 2021 when he debuted, slash 295, 380, 534. Then went up to came stateside with a complex level, little low A, that year, 314, 384, 498 slash line. And you fast forward to 2023, that's when the full-on breakout occurred. 117 games, 510 plate appearances, 324, 384, 591 slash line, 31 home runs, struck out less than 20% of the time, just proving that he's one of the best power hitters in all of the minor leagues. Man, so I guess the question, like, he's the end question number one. I think that's pretty obvious, but how high do you think, if he hits like a 90th percentile outcome, what do you think just like the overall upside is for a guy like Cameron? Like, how high can he rise in overall rankings once he gets this, once he gets settled in?
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if he does pan out how we think, that he ends up looking something like an Austin Riley or Rafael Devers. Like, yep. He's got that kind of power. He's got a really good feel to hit too. That may surprise some people, but he does hit the ball very hard. His ninth percentile EV would have been fifth in all of baseball last year. That's talking with the majors. So behind the likes of like Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Ronald Acuna Jr., Shohei Ohtani, like those kind of elite power bats. The contact is good. I think he could be a 275 hitter consistently that gives you 30 plus home runs consistently. Not going to run, but neither do those guys, Riley and Devers. So that's why I believe that the talent is there for him to really take off if all clicks right. And it could, and it should pretty quick. There may be some ups and downs this year. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if we see some ups and downs with him, but rookie year, he's still young. He will be fine. And I think a top 20 player is pretty realistic.
Yeah, that's where I think he could go up to two. And I've said those two names as well, Devers, Riley range, because you look at my dynasty third base ranks, and for tier one, currently I have Ellie, Gunner, Joe Ram, Devers, and Riley. And I think he can get up into that tier. Right now, he's already in tier two. I have him as my current third base seven for Dynasty. Behind the other one in front of him in the sixth spot is Royce Lewis. So I think he could absolutely get up into that tier. He's already a top 50 overall Dynasty guy for me. I think I have him like in the mid-40s or something like that right now. I have him ahead of Machado at this point. I have him ahead of Josh Young, Marte, Arenado, etc. Because the four-category upside is very, it's massive. Like you mentioned, he's not going to run a lot, but he doesn't really need to. If he's to be a Devers Riley type, and yeah, Devers had a couple years where he had like 8, 9, 10 steals, whatever. But even as a single-digit steal guy, if you're going to hit 270+, if you're going to have 30+ home runs and plenty of counting stats as well, hitting in the middle of a always pretty solid Tampa Bay lineup, you'll be able to be a top 25 guy. We've seen it with Austin Riley. Boom, he doesn't provide speed, but he's just really good in the other four categories. And I think that's what we're looking at with Cameron Arrows. Absolutely top 25 overall potential. And honestly, moving over to Kobe Mayo, I don't think the upside is that much lower for a Kobe Mayo. Look at, obviously, the power is massive when you're talking about Kobe Mayo. He had average EV around 92 miles an hour. He had a 90th percentile. I think it was around like 106, if I recall correctly. And he improved his contact rates this past year, improved the walk rate a ton by about 6%, went from about 9% to about 15%, dropped the K rate a few percentage points as well, all while still flexing that massive power. And then the end of the season line was 290, 410, 564, 29 home runs and 45 doubles in 140 games. And that was almost split between AA and AAA. Yeah, he might move over to first base. He did play a little bit there, and we'll see. There's pretty much a log jam in the Baltimore infield, especially on that left side. But I don't care what position he's at, third, first. This guy could be top five or close to it at either position. And I think 260, 270 for him as well, 30-plus home runs, a good lineup in Baltimore. So I don't think the upside for Mayo is that far off, Chris.
No, I don't think so either. He certainly has the power, as you mentioned, and over the full season, the numbers were even better in double A. And so combined triple and double A, ninth percentile was 108. It's extreme. Caminero was like 110 and a half. So not far off there when we're talking about it. He lifts the ball with ease, cut the strikeout rate. Like, he's done a lot of things well, makes a lot of contact. He doesn't chase much at all. So he's going to be like picturesque player that you want to see. He's got a great body too. He's just athletic at 6'5", like 200, very athletic build. And so he really impressed me with, like, when I saw him a couple times this year, like just the controlled swing that he had in AAA against pretty good pitching. Like, I saw him against Max Fried and he looked pretty good. So that kind of speaks volume that Mayo's ready. He's a top 10 prospect. He's a masher. And like you said, I don't think he's that far behind Caminero from that standpoint. He's got the contact, he's got the power, he's a good athlete too. He's just got a log jam in front of him. How does he fit in the picture, and when does he come up, I think are the questions. Regardless, it's still the profile is still one that should excel long term.
And he might even be the better Dynasty target right now. Let's look at the price. I think the perceived value for Caminero is incredibly high, as it should be. And yeah, Mayo, people know that Mayo's really good. He's a sleeper or anything like that. But I think you look at the perceived value and the cost it will take to acquire each of these two guys, it's probably a better value to go out and try to get Kobe Mayo right now. So yeah, definitely love Mayo. He's one that's, I was a little down on the hit tool at first, and he proved me wrong. And that's, I have him top 10. I think I have him ninth overall right now. So absolutely top 10. But I wonder, do you think Nolan Marte might have the highest pure ceiling for fantasy, though? Obviously, Marte has been a very interesting prospect through the years. Like, never put up the huge, obviously, numbers were very good in the minor leagues, but I think people always expected him to have like that one just massive year, which never really came. But overall, guy was a 282 hitter in the minor leagues, walk rate above 10%, 367 OBP, and has that power speed blend where the power, it might not be on Mayo's range or Caminero's range, probably a tick below. But once you factor in Great American Ballpark, could he be a 25-plus homer guy? I think so. And if he keeps running, that was the thing that, all right, when he bulked up in 2022, would he keep running? Yes, he has. Last year, he had 18 steals in 92 games in the minors and then 6 in 35. So quick math, 24 steals in 127 games overall with pretty solid efficiency as well. So he still does run a bit. So once you factor in the speed, solid hit tool as well, he might have, like, if all these guys hit like their 90th percentile outcomes, he might be have the highest pure ceiling though, Chris. Like, what do you think about that?
For fantasy, it's possible, just because you mentioned the speed element that Caminero and Mayo don't bring to the table. Marte still got that. He showed good speed debuting this year in Cincinnati. Surprising that, as you mentioned, he's very thick bodied. He still runs well. The sprint speed, the home to first time, so they're still really good. He plays an incredible home ballpark. Great American's going to play up significantly for his power, but he's got the kind of power that transcends parks anyway.
Right.
But still, can only help. He's got to lift the ball, hit the ball at ideal launch angles more often. That's really been the biggest knock on him, is just the lack of barrels. You have too many ground balls, too many poor pop-ups, like those kind of things where we have to watch that. But I think you're right that Nelvi Marte's ceiling is certainly one that could really be above both of these guys if all clicks right. A little bit more risky from the standpoint of contact, strikeouts, but his numbers were really good this year. Across the board, like, he made major improvements, which is great to see. I'm going to pull up. I've got the numbers on him for the season to see. Pretty sure he was like 85% zone contact, if I'm not mistaken, which is pretty substantial. Yeah, his ninth percentile was 106, which is really solid. Then the numbers in the majors were really good too. The contact rates were really solid. Zone in the minors, 86%, 83% in the majors. So those numbers can play. I think he's a 30 home run bat in Great American, and he's got speed. So fun profile.
Yeah, everyone knows I've always been, you know, pretty big Nolby Marte guy dating back to his Seattle days, and yeah, him getting into that Cincinnati org with that ballpark, man, that's could be 25 plus home runs, could be a guy that's 15 plus deals, solid average. I think that lineup's going to be really good if Ellie continues to make improvements. And McLean, CES, Steer, all these guys, free, you know, not either, even all the veterans like the Friedels and the Fraley's and the Will Bensons, so to speak. That's going to be a really fun lineup, and obviously the best hitters park in baseball, or at least it's up there between that and Coors. But yeah, I'm very excited for Marte, and I think he's a great, I think he's still a great value target, because I don't think the perceived value is quite caught on up yet. But I think this might be the last time you can probably get him at any type of reasonable value. After those four, then we have Keith up there, but we already talked about him last or 2 weeks ago at second base, because he's probably moving over there. But who do you think, with Keith moving over, you know, they've acquired Justin Henry Molloy from your Atlanta Braves, Chris, and also moving Josh Jung over there. How do you think that position winds up? Like, who do you think, look ahead 3 years from now, who is the starting third baseman for Detroit? Think it's Molloy, think it's Jung, or someone else?
It's not Molloy. I think Molloy's definitely in a corner outfield spot. He doesn't play third base well enough, and he's already transitioned to a corner spot. I'm not sure if it's Keith either. It could be, but I think Keith may be a second baseman long-term. Right. We mentioned him in that episode. Maybe it's Jung. They did transition him over there. He was playing there in the fall league, but maybe somebody else. We don't know. They could go out and get somebody, which is a real possibility. But the situation in Detroit, I would say I'm most comfortable projecting Justin Henry Molloy in a corner outfield spot rather than third base, even though he's played both. And Keith probably moves over to second, if I had to guess. So
yep.
The indications say that Jung will be the third baseman. But again, it's too soon to say. He's only spent time in the fall league there. And really, that's not enough of a sample for us to give a definite answer that he's going to be a third baseman. So maybe it's outside the org.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
I think they got a lot of options there as those three that we mentioned. And maybe they do go outside the org. But yeah, that's going to be a fun little situation in the fall here over the next years. You know, how these guys, where they play in the upper minors. And obviously, Molloy and Keith are going to debut at some point this year, probably early. So we'll see if either of those two get reps there. Jung probably half a season or more behind those two. But maybe he debuts later on in 2024. We'll see. But it's a fun little situation to monitor for sure. So after the top four, that's when I think rankings can go any which way. You know, I got Brock Wilken at five. You have him at six, Chris. And for in FYPD, he's an absolute top 10 guy for me. Like, another guy that I don't want to go quite and say Austin Riley upside, but I see a lot of similarities. When Riley was a prospect, obviously the power was always there, and then he made those improvements on the pure hitting side, making more contact, cutting down the swing and miss. And that's kind of what Brock Wilkin has done as well. That was the going into the spring before he was drafted, those were the question marks by a lot of draft evaluators. And he answered those. He improved the contact rates. He improved his approach, still without sacrificing power. And I think he's a guy that's, you know, easy 30-plus home run bat that could hit 260-plus. So that's why I keep moving him higher and higher in my rankings. He's now inside my top 40 overall, 36 right now in my overall rankings. I keep moving him higher and higher, Chris. What are your thoughts on Brock Wilkin here? Do you think he's a guy that's going to, when we move ahead next year, I don't think he debuts this year, but are we talking about him next year when we do these episodes in December or January of 2025, that we're talking about him like we are Mayo and Keith now, like that top 10 overall range?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. He's got that kind of pedigree and upside where in college, the numbers were through the roof, as you might expect for a big-bodied player who gets the power and was hitting with a metal bat. So obviously, that matters. He had 71 career home runs, over 821 plate appearances at Wake, hit .345, had an OBP over 500. He made contacts on 77% of pitches in college. The average EV of 95 with a 108/90 is really high. So those numbers have the makings of an elite hitter. You certainly expect to see a downtick with Wood and in professional ball. But Wilkin moved pretty quickly through the system, and he still showed results even as he moved up. The contact rate carried over. He made contact on about 75% of pitches in the minors, which is pretty substantial. And the power is there. The power's arguably 70 grade raw. It's legit power. I think he plays up in an OBP league just due to those skills. Like, he's going to take a lot of walks. He's got a skill set that you really can dream on. So I'm very excited about Wilkin. And I do think that if all clicks, then he continues to move up the rankings in the third base ladder.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely there with you. Like I said, I'm a big Wilkin guy. I think he's made the adjustments we want to see. And obviously he needs to continue making those adjustments and making sure he doesn't revert back to previous ways, but very encouraging to see what he did. And he was looking really good after the draft as well. In 47 games after the draft, hit .285 with a .414 OBP, only 5 home runs in 47 games, but we know the power's there. I'm not overly worried about that. And yeah, back to he was more walks than strikeouts his last year at Wake Forest, after having twice as many walks as strikeouts his previous year. Very encouraging to see that as well. So yeah, definitely go get Brock Wilkin right now. FYPD or regardless, go get Brock Wilkin. I think he's going to be a guy that we're talking about as a top 20 prospect very soon. The other buzzy name in the kind of like the back half of this top 10, after a very big offensive year, is Tyler Black from the Milwaukee Brewers, guy that we could see sooner rather than later in Milwaukee. They don't really have a long-term option right now, so maybe Black is that guy. In 123 games this past year, 84 in AA, 39 in AAA, slash .284, .417, .513, 25 doubles, 12 triples, 18 home runs, 55 steals. We had 2 20-50 guys this year, Class A and Ryan Bliss, if I recall correctly. He was almost a third one, and almost as many walks as strikeouts as well, 88 walks to 100 strikeouts. I think he's still being slept on a little bit, Chris. Solid contact skills. Obviously, the approach is very good. Speed is there. Power isn't great, but can it be a 15 homer bat? Sure. I think that's definitely in play. So if we're looking at a potential 15-30 guy with a decent average and a better OBP, I think this would be very valuable. Like a weird profile for third base, but one that could provide a good amount of fantasy value, though.
I think so. And I think that when you look at the org, I think he lines up to get reps this year, like as soon as opening day. He's got really strong contact skills. He's smaller. He's listed at 5'10", but I think he looks a little bigger. But that's accurate, I know, because of the way that they measured this year, obviously, for the ABS system, all that stuff. But you know, he had an 80% contact rate, 87% zone, didn't chase much at all, like very patient approach, high OBP type player. The EVs are fine. He did make a jump as far as exit velocities go, but he's like closer to average power. I'm not sure he's a more than like a 15 home run bat, but he did steal 55 bags. So there's athleticism and speed, which is certainly interesting to the profile. And I think that for fantasy purposes, that kind of profile does play up. So he's got a little bit of pop, got really good OBP skills, and he's going to be on base a lot to steal. And so I think that allows him to really, just the on base factor opens him up to steal more bases. So Black may be a contributor pretty soon this year. And you know, I think that he's undervalued a bit. So I'm in on him, not overly in, but I do like profile.
Where do you have him in your overall rankings, Chris? I have him currently, I have him right behind Wilkins. He's in the currently 41st in my overall rankings. My last update in September, I had him 67. So I've already moved him up a little bit over 25 spots since then. But I think he's a top 50 guy. Given the skill set he has and his proximity to the major leagues, I don't think many have him top 50 overall, but I do have him there right now. But where do you have him in your overall?
He's 93rd right now. Just don't believe in the power as much. That's my biggest thing. It's like, where's the power land?
Yep.
And how does that profile? So for me, I'm a little more reserved on the ranking and just because of the power.
No, that's totally fair. All right, let's move on to the rest of our top 25 rankings here. But to recap, the top 10 for Chris: Junior Caminero, Kobe Mayo, Colt Keith, Noelvi Marte, Curtis Meade, Brock Wilkin, Aroldis Martinez, Brian Ramos, Michael Bush, Tyler Black. For me, Caminero, Mayo, Marte, Keith, Wilkin, Black, Graham Pauly, Curtis Meade, Michael Bush, and Justin Henry Molloy. 11 through 25 for me, that is Zach DiCenzo, Thomas Ajayi, Aiden Miller, Brian Ramos, Sterling Thompson, Cam Collier, Mac Horvath, Braden Taylor, Aslivas Basabe, Addison Barger, Aroldis Martinez, Luke Adams, Blaze Jordan, Bryce Matthews, and Reese Hines. Rounds up my top 25. Chris, who you got 11 to 25?
All right. So for me, starting at 11 is Aiden Miller, first round pick this year, followed by Zach DiCenzo, Graham Pauly, Thomas Sejasi, and Addison Barger at 15. 16 through 20 is Cam Collier, Justin Henry Molloy, Braden Taylor, Sterling Thompson, Luke Adams, and the final five are Mac Horvath, Blaze Jordan, Ignacio Alvarez, who I actually don't think played enough there. We talked about that before, and I didn't clear him off my sheet, but Sal Stewart and Austin Shenton, and I'll give one more since Ignacio Alvarez technically isn't a third baseman yet. Damiano Palmigiani coming in at 25. Jeez, that's right.
Was he the, obviously 2 years ago, the fan favorite out there in the AFL for all of us FPAS attendees was Joey Weimer. You think Palmigiani takes that crown for this past year as like the fan favorite?
I think so. Everybody, at least from our group, everybody just really loved him.
Yeah, it's fun. It's always, every year, there's always one guy who we just fall in love with just as like a player for whatever reason. And then another guy who's just ADP goes up. 2 years ago, that was Mervis. This past year, probably Manzardo, I think, did the most for his 2024 ADP. So it's always fun going out there. But anyway, so top 25 is right there. Let's get into some player discussion here. Let's start with Brian Ramos, though, who I have at 14. You have at 8. And I almost wanted to put him up. There's so many guys I like in this range, so it's hard to move people up and down. But Ramos is a guy that I probably should have moved up, and I might move up a couple of spots before I post my next overall update, because he was very impressive out in both obviously 2023 he was impressive, and then in our live looks out in the Arizona Fall League, he was impressive as well. Still only 21, he'll be 22 middle of March, and this past year I was mostly in Double A, 81 games overall, slash 264, 358, 450, 15 home runs, 10 doubles. So like the stats didn't really jump off the page at you, but look at that's a full season pace of nearly 30 home runs. And he was just the quality of his bats were just really good, was hitting the ball hard all over the field. So I think he's at this position, at least, Chris, maybe one of the better, value targets to go after in dynasty leagues.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure the value is really caught up on where he is, but he hits the ball really hard. He makes good contact. I think it's a profile that I'm willing to bet on, especially in a shallow Chicago system. We're looking at plus power. At least he had 90th percentile of 106 miles an hour this year. Firmly plus in my book. He hits power to all fields. The contact skills are solid. He doesn't need to be elite. I think he can be 260 to 270 hitter. When that kind of power is going to play, especially in a lineup that so desperately needs that. So I'm heavily investing in Brian Ramos, and I think others should too.
Yeah, absolutely agree on that. I think he's one of the better value targets. The upside isn't massive, but he could be a solid blend of average and power. Maybe a guy that's going to be like a 270, 20 homer type, maybe a little bit more power than that. We'll see. But he's going to get a shot at some point. Maybe not so much this year. He could debut 2024, but maybe it'll be second half of the year. But I think 2025 is going to be the real first year he impacts fantasy leagues. And I think right now is a good time to go out and get him. Another one that we had both in this kind of 11 to 15 range of our rankings, I had him 13th. You had him 11th, was Aiden Miller. The first round pick by the Philadelphia Phillies this past June, 27th overall, 19 years old, was a high school bat out of Florida. And I know someone you've been very high, obviously we both are, but Chris, you specifically have been very high on Aiden Miller dating back to our FYPD talk before the draft. How high do you think a guy like Aiden Miller can rise? Like obviously this will be his first full year in the minor leagues. He got 20 games split between complex and low A Clearwater after the draft this past year. But once he has a full season under his belt in 2024, look ahead to next offseason. How high do you think Aiden Miller is going to rise at this position? Do you think he's a guy that could be maybe even top five at this position next offseason?
I think so. His profile just is one that I really want to bet on. I comped him to like a Brady House with a little better hit tool and discipline, which speaks a lot because I always liked Brady House a good bit. But Miller has power. He's got a frame that you can dream on. He doesn't chase out of the zone. He makes really good contact, especially in the zone. So it's a profile to me that looks like a player that will only continue to rise. I think he was a steal in the draft, going 27 overall to the Phillies. It's a good landing spot. It's a good org. And so org really needs to have an elite bat in their system. I think they got it in Aiden Miller. And just this profile has always intrigued me. He didn't really get the love in draft circles because he was hurt this senior year. But that doesn't take away from the fact that he's been one of the biggest names on the like showcase circuit for several years now. So I'm really in on Aiden Miller. I think he's going to be a great FYPD value and a really good dynasty investment too.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of breakout appeal. Guy that's going to contribute both solid average and OBP. And pretty good amount of pop as well. Going to be in a good, probably in a good lineup in a good hitter's park there. He did play, he's still, maybe we shouldn't have talked about him until the shortstop episode because he's only played shortstop this past year. But I do think he's more of a third baseman long term. Like I think Stott's their shortstop there. But yeah, I like Aiden Miller a good amount here. And since you mentioned Brady House, I just realized, Chris, we didn't include Brady House in our rankings here. I think we should add him in right now. He played only third base this past year. So before we get all the questions on Twitter, I had him, he was shortstop only until this past year and then switched over completely to third base. So I'm going to add him in right now to this set of rankings. I have him in my overall right behind Graham Pauly. for this position. So that puts him eighth for me, right? It's right behind Graham Pauly and right ahead of Curtis Mead. Where would you put him in yours?
Let's see. Let me pull him over. All pretty high on House. Have him 39th overall, which is just behind Curtis Mead in third base ranking. So he slots in ahead of Wilkin for me. Yeah, it's a profile that I really like. I'm not sure. I feel like I like Wilkin better looking at him side by side. But House is somebody that he's always had a better hit tool than he's been given credit for. Always had plus power. But the injuries have hampered him a bit. So I think that's a big question that he still has to answer. Can he be healthy for a full season and ultimately put all his skills to use? He's a pretty good athlete for his size. He's got really good barrel control, good bat speed. So House is somebody I still like. I've loved him for a long time, and not much has changed at this point for me on Brady House.
Yeah, I think he's maybe even a bit undervalued right now. I think people have thrown the overrated tag on him a little bit, just compared to what is the expectations were for him coming out of the draft a few years ago. But he hit .312 last year, 12 home runs, 9 steals in 88 games. And I think he could be a guy that hits .280. And I think he's a guy that could hit, you know, 20, 25 home runs and add in, you know, maybe 5 to 10 steals as well. So, yeah, definitely a no doubt top 10 prospect at this position. And a guy that's maybe even close to top 5. And you had him 6th, and I'm 8th. So definitely right in that kind of tier 3 range for sure. All right, moving back over here to a little bit further down in our rankings. I just want to make sure we got him in at this episode here. Let's look at the – we have two Toronto names on here, Chris, with Addison Barger and Aroldis Martinez, two guys that both kind of played shortstop and third. And we realized Barger actually played a little bit of outfield as well with some right field this year in the upper minors. Obviously, as of now, so I got Bo Bichette at shortstop. So how do you feel like this third base – situation plays out in Toronto here, or maybe more so for these two guys? We got Palmigiani's played some third base as well. Right now, there isn't that long-term option. Looks like they're going to have some little bit of Kevin Biggio there, maybe a little bit of Santiago Espinal, maybe even some Falefa now that he's in the mix. So obviously not a current long-term option. Do you think one of these guys fills it between Barger or Relvis, Palmigiani? Maybe Barger's more of a super utility guy. How do you think that situation works out in Toronto?
I think that Elvis is the long-term third baseman. I just don't see him as a shortstop long-term. Maybe I'm off on that, but I think he certainly suits better at the hot corner than at short. I do think that Palmigiani's probably the most ready. If they were going to throw one of these guys at third base on opening day, it's going to be Palmigiani, not Orelvis. Barger, who I love the bat and the versatility. For me, I think that he probably is more of a utility guy, or he just plays second base long term, which is still a real possibility, I'd say.
Yeah, I think redraft, if you're in a DC, Palmigiani is a great late line target.
Yeah.
I'm trying to pull up. We'll see. So I can pull up his ADP super quick here. So let's look at just DCs. Let's cut out the first month of ADP. Let's start with November 1st. He is at, I bet you he's got to be 500 plus. Let's see. Oh, well, yeah, he's 726. Like a guy you can get in the last round or two, because he's only been taken in 13 of 32 drafts for NFBC since then. So yeah, definitely a guy that I'll be targeting heavily. I'm in a DC right now. I'm also in an NFBC 50 right now. It's probably a guy I'll look at the last couple rounds of each of those. Yeah, I definitely think he has some sneaky value this year. Could be maybe, I'm not saying he's same as David Schneider, but could be a similar pop-up sneaky value guy where Schneider was this past year. So, yeah, Palmigiani, good amount here. Another name here that I had top 10, you didn't. I had this guy 7th. You had him 13th, and that's Graham Pauly from the San Diego Padres. Another, you know, San Diego had a few pop-up prospects this year, obviously Jacob Marcy's being the other one. But Graham Pauly had a very good year. So I'm wondering if you're buying it, Chris, or is this guy you think is going to be an impact fantasy guy, or maybe more so a guy you look to sell high in dynasty leagues if you had him? Because you look at what he did overall between low A, high A, and double A. 127 games, 551 plate appearances, went 20-20, 23 home runs, 22 steals, also had 32 doubles, and a 308, 393, 539 slash line. So if you had Graham Pauly right now, Chris, what are you looking to do with him?
I still don't think that the perceived value is as high as it should be. He's really good. And people may look at how he finished the AFL, can be out. But, you know, I still really like Pauly. He got better at every level. His contact skills are firmly plus. The EVs are probably closer to average, but he's just so good at lifting the ball. Like, the barrel rate is insanely high, like one of the best barrel rates in the minors good. So I'm still in on Pauly. You look at what he did at each level, as I mentioned, just got better and better. He was, you know, 45% better than league average in single A, 68% better than league average in high A, and then 41% better than league average in double A. So those numbers are really good. I don't think his value's peaked. I'd still invest. I think he probably gets a shot in San Diego sooner than later.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. I think probably starts back at double A, though maybe they push him to triple A. Start the year, but guys, probably up maybe July, August or so. And yeah, I think he's definitely still undervalued as well. So I'd buy high, and I think the value is going to keep going up. I have him, seventh at this position. Overall, I have him 53 right now, so right in that top 50 range. And this tier that he's in for me goes up to probably about 40 or so. So definitely like a top 50 caliber prospect and a guy that could be maybe even top 25 by midseason if he continues what he did this past year. The one thing, like the approach did get a little worse when he went to high A. He had as many walks as strikeouts in low A, 40-40, and then that went down to 13 walks to 41 Ks in high A. Though he was fine in double A, 7 walks to 12 Ks. So I want to see if he can revert back to his low A ways at the plate. But yeah, you mentioned it, Chris, like the barrel rate's very high. Contact skills are very good. A little bit of speed there as well. And I like Graham Pauly a good amount. Last name here, a guy that you and I both seen. So I thought that'd be a good way to close out the show. A guy that's obviously a big prospect name just because he was hyped up a few years ago when he was getting drafted. And that's Blaze Jordan from the Boston Red Sox. Just turned 21 about a week and a half ago. Still very young, got up to double A this past year, 73 games in high A Greenville down in Chris's neck of the woods, 49 up in double A Portland, my neck of the woods. Overall, 122 games, 525 plate appearances, 296, 351, 481 slash line, 32 doubles, 18 home runs, 40 walks to 75 Ks. What are your long-term thoughts on Blaze Jordan? Obviously, he's played some first base as well. I was almost split there between first and third. I think we both don't think he's going to be a third baseman, but for now, we'll talk about him. So is he a guy you'd still look to invest in dynasty leagues? I think he's probably getting traded. I think either him or York or both are getting traded this offseason. Maybe I'm wrong, but he's a guy that he looked good, and the stats have always been pretty solid. I think he's going to be maybe like an Alec Bohm type in that range, like a solid corner infield type, never a guy you're looking to, you know, be your starter at either of these two corner infield positions. But what are your thoughts on Blaze Jordan long term?
He is weird data. Like, his profile flipped this year where he sold out for contact and just didn't hit for power. Like, talking about like average EV near like between 85 and 86, that's not something you'd expect by looking at a player like Blaze Jordan. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on. His contact rate looks really good, and it is good. 86% in the zone. The numbers, surface numbers are really good, but I partially wonder if he hits these little flares like over people's like the second baseman's head. So I don't know. It's a strange profile to me. He's lost nearly 30 pounds this offseason. I'll be curious to see what the athleticism looks like coming into 2024. It's still a profile that I think that still has better days ahead. And he's a prospect who still hadn't written his story fully, still quite young. So I'm not out on Blaze Jordan, but I'm not in on him either.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm in the middle on him. Like, he was very underwhelming. And Mylev looks better in the season. He wasn't really driving much at all. And yeah, it's a shift coming up here from South Carolina to Maine, even though it was the summertime. So it's not like he came up here early season when it's cold and rainy and just miserable overall weather-wise. But he just didn't impress. And I'm not trying to make too many assumptions or change my ranking on him or long-term thought process on him too much because of that. But yeah, I think this is going to be a make-or-break year. I think this is going to be a very telltale year on Jordan to see what type of player he is long-term. But to wrap up the show, Chris, is Jordan still in the Sox org on opening day?
I think so, because I think his value is a little, his perceived value around the industry is just a little lower. I do think the Sox make some trades, but I'm not sure they're ready to trade Blaze Jordan yet, just because they want to let him rebuild a little value and see what he looks like coming into this season, just with the change in his body.
That's fair. Yeah, I'm 50-50 on him. If he's still in the org by this time next or by opening day, I think the most likely trade candidate is probably Nick York. I think with the addition of Vaughn Grissom at second base, I think Nick York, I'd say 75% chance Nick York is gone. So, but yeah, let's wrap it up. We started the show with a little Sox trade talk, ended it with a little Sox trade talk. Good way to bookend the show. But that is going to wrap up our third base prospect rankings up. Again, this was a real fun position to break down, a lot of intriguing names here. And we'll be back later in the week with two more episodes, as I mentioned. Our Dynasty Debates will be out either Wednesday or Thursday. And then on Friday, we have Dynasty Third Base Rankings with James Anderson. So that'd be a really fun show. So come back and check that one out. But until then, everyone take care.
From a meeting at the office to a big first date, there's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every event. But clothes don't make the man. So why stuff your closet with things that only work for some situations? With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting. Their clothing is understated and tells the world that you stay you wherever you go. They craft each piece by combining timeless style and modern performance materials, so you can stay looking good and feeling comfortable from morning to evening. No wardrobe changes required. Browse everything from summer-ready tech linen shorts and anti-odor polos to tailored sweats and crews for a night in. They can outfit you for anything, no matter what's on your agenda for the day. Go to MacWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MAC25.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.